honorable members. Let me welcome everybody. Let me welcome the department as well, Mrs. Nelly and team. Also welcome the from the media. Today we are going to be handling a very interesting area, the international aspects regarding energy. Well, specifically is what the Department of Energy is doing on international arena. Last year, we didn't touch this area, and I felt we should quite ahead or early in the year to start addressing international issues, to have a sense as to what the department is doing, and also have a sense as to what issues in the international arena are affecting the energy sector in South Africa. I'm sure we must have been digging up in the media and elsewhere that there have been quite a number of disconcerting activities in the energy sector that are taking place that affect in particular energy security or security of supply of energy, particularly petroleum. So obviously we have to be alert and we have to have a sense as to what and how the department is addressing that. But generally, we are aware that the department is also active in a number of international platforms. So that also would be helpful for us to have a sense of what they are doing. Let me then hand over to the department to take us through. But before we do that, our committee secretary, Mr. Godse, will take us through apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson. We've received the following apologies. Honorable Tinto, who's on sick leave, and Honorable Smaller, who's attending constituency work as well, Chair. We've also received an apology from Emma Dibela, but I just got hold of her downstairs, so she is here as well, and she will be attending the meeting. That's the apologies, Chair.
Honorable Smaller is the new chief in the block.
Yes.
Well, we'll welcome him in absentia. Okay, thanks very much. I almost was about to suggest that we send flowers to Honorable Tinto, but she seems to be going out to, she's going to be discharged today. Yeah, because I only picked up yesterday, so we can only wish her well. Maybe we'll just send SMSs and wish her well. That be the case, can we then hand over to the department to take us through?
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, good morning. Chairperson, okay, maybe I need to start with my own apology. I have to leave at 9:30 because I've got to also go and attend the Select Committee on Economic Development. They would like us to make a presentation there on the electrification program. Chair, if I can just quickly introduce the team. I have got Mrs. Zungu on my left-hand side. She is the DDG Compliance Office, and international coordination is one of her components. And Ms. Marabo, who is the Chief Director responsible for international coordination. And then I've got Ms. Tandiwe Maimani, who is responsible for communicating everywhere. And then Ms. Ndebele, who is at my office. So I will request quickly Ms. Marabo to take us through. But Chair, before she can start, I just want to indicate that our international activities are informed are informed by the issues of national interest. What is it that would like to, what is it that is of interest to South Africa? And issues around cooperation around climate change, security of supply, diversification of our energy mix, and then of course regionally, our collaboration around distribution of electricity and also power pools is of key interest to us as a department. So that's what really informs our international engagement strategy. I thank you, Chair. Ms. Marawa, please, if you can proceed.
Good morning, Honourable Members, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, the Director General and colleagues. I'm just going to make a presentation on the international activities of the Department of Energy. As an introduction, I will start off by giving the major challenges of the Department in terms of our international engagement. We will also highlight the issue of security and continuity of countries' energy supply, particularly for oil, gas and electricity. I will also touch on issues of the deficit of the energy mix, climate change issues, and the role in Africa, in Southern Africa in particular. I will also look at the bilateral and international relations issues by the Department of Energy, and specifically focus on the Standard Power Pool and the way we have dealt with the Department of Energy and our participation in the Power Pool, and then quickly conclude. In terms of the international relations, we are guided by the foreign policy as articulated by the Department of International Coordination, and the main important issues with respect to the international engagement is that we need to prioritize our national interests, we need to prioritize the African continent, we also need to prioritize the South-South relationship, and we also work on the North-South relationship. So within the energy context, we have coined our strategy to focus on those specific areas in alignment with our international relations policy. Specifically with respect to energy, there are main issues that we focus on, as the DG has already indicated. The issue of energy security is very critical. Issue of climate change is very critical. Issue of access to resources is also quite critical. And issues related to skills, capacity, access to funding, and access to technology and information. In the explanation of how the department is operated, I will actually highlight how each of those issues is being dealt with different countries and different stakeholders, from bilateral to multilateral stakeholders, and highlight how we have dealt with each aspect, and how we have also ensured that within that context we meet our own mandate, the national mandate, and the regional mandate. In terms of security of supply, particularly within the hydrocarbon sector for oil and gas, we are aware that we depend on import for 60 to 70% of our oil we import from the Middle East, and our gas is mainly imported from the Republic of Mozambique. So what is very critical is that the department wants to ensure that we diversify our sources of energy, particularly of oil and gas, and that we diversify and ensure that we access resources, particularly oil from other countries. And the department has promoted that particular agenda, and we've seen that from our imports. If you look at the South African imports, you will see that there is an increase of imports from such countries as Angola and Nigeria. The diversification is still on, but we...
Just a moment.
Thank you, Chief.
I definitely can assert your speed is a bit high. Please slow down, take your time. There were supposed to be a few other things which we were supposed to be discussing today, but unfortunately, Honourable Members, the Speaker's office hasn't yet considered them. So they are off the agenda. So we've got a little bit more time, which is going to be very helpful in any case, because, as I have said, you know, first time, well, of course, in my tenure, that we are addressing international issues. So let's let's take a little bit of time to go in depth on stuff, so that we do have a grip, on international issues. Thank you. Sorry for the interruption.
Thank you, Chief.
Take a deep breath. I know I pulled you off your train of thinking, but you can repeat if you don't mind. Whatever you do, it's up to you.
Okay. Thank you, Chief. I'm going to maybe let the drivers of our international relations strategy articulate on each of the drivers and then move on to give the specific examples. The cornerstone of our international engagement is especially energy security of supply. It's energy security of supply for both hydrocarbons, for electricity as well. And for hydrocarbons, it's quite critical because South Africa does not have oil resources, and our gas reserves are also very minimal. We are looking forward to what is going to happen with the shale gas issue so that we can at least have access to gas. So in order for us to have access to oil and gas, we need to actually engage at an international level to access producing or near producing assets to ensure that as a country we have got our own oil that comes from another country or from a nearby country that we can depend on in terms of our security of supply, irrespective of the fact that it will be produced from another country. Then another important issue is related to that is general access to resources, which is the blocks, the gas blocks or the oil blocks. Then another important element within the context of our policy is the diversity of supplies. We are aware that in terms of electricity in particular, we are very much dependent on coal. So in order for us to diversify our supply, we need to ensure that the energy mix is balanced. As we speak, the International Integrated Resource Plan has been approved, and within that context, we have now 42% of our new generation capacity supposed to be coming from renewable energy. Linked to that particular agenda also is the issue of climate change. As you are aware, the President is committed that we are going to reduce our carbon footprint, and the energy sector is very strategic and important in ensuring that we reduce our carbon footprint. In general, energy sectors contribute about 80% towards the emissions, and in South Africa, because we are coal intensive, which is also CO2 intensive, it really significantly contributes to our carbon footprint. And for that, we have coined the Integrated Resource Plan in a way that would reduce our carbon footprint by contributing 42% of the new generation capacity. If we are going to move into new forms of energy, particularly the renewable energy, and also to increase our nuclear component, we need to ensure that we have sufficient skills to be able to ensure our state of readiness to deploy the new technologies. So skills and capacity building are very strategic to our international relations engagement. Another important also element is that if we are going to go on a trajectory of increasing our energy infrastructure and our generation capacity, and also for the economy to benefit from such an investment, it is important that we access the technology, we have the skills, and we are also able to transfer the technologies and ensure that the deployment of those new technologies will assist in the industrialization of the energy sector, it will assist in employment creation, job creation, and it will also boost the economic growth of the country. So as international relations unit, we are also driving the issue of technology transfer. We are also driving the issue of localization, and we also ensure that in our engagement, we highlight the issues related to our economic empowerment related policies. So another important element is access to information. We make sure that in every agreement that we sign, we highlight the issue that when we have the relationship, we need to have access to information so that we can understand how the sectors operate, we can understand how the technologies are deployed, and so on and so forth. Then on a multilateral level, we normally engage to ensure that we look at issues related to globally, any issues of energy access, to issues of funding, and also to issues of pricing. That particularly it focuses on the oil sector, where we are aware that oil prices are fluctuating significantly. We participate on such organizations as the International Energy Forum, which provides a platform for producers and consumers to conduct a dialogue on the pricing of oil and gas. It also conducts a dialogue on the issues related to technology investment in the sector, and also ensuring security of and adequate supply of oil particularly. So that is, in a nutshell, the way we have driven our policy. So the presentation is divided into three areas. The one will focus on how we have driven the policy with respect to the hydrocarbon sector. The second will look at clean energy. And lastly, we'll look in a nutshell on nuclear. With respect to hydrocarbons, mainly oil and gas, as I've already indicated, we import 60 to 70% of our crude from the Middle East, and we almost import all our gas from Mozambique. That is it is then important for us to ensure that we diversify our sources, and secondly, we also have access to producing and new producing assets of oil and gas. So in order to do that, we have been conducting bilateral relations with different countries, particularly on the African continent. We are aware that Africa is actually made significant discoveries of both oil and gas. We are one of the emerging continents in terms of production and also identification of new assets of oil and gas. And our national oil company, particularly Petro SA, has been engaged in relationship on the continent to explore for oil and gas. In terms of the particular countries that we have focused on, we have looked at, in Africa, we have looked at Egypt. We signed an oil and gas MOU in 2010. We initiated the development of an implementation plan, and Petro SA was actually involved in looking at specific assets that they could identify and start working on. Unfortunately, that process has been put on hold for the time being, but the relationship is fine. We also signed an MOU with Ghana last year in September, which also focuses on oil and gas, and the intention is now for Petro SA to go in and develop an implementation plan and negotiate to have access to their oil and gas assets, so that we are developing our own assets that can contribute to our own security of supply. We have also signed an MOU in 2010 with Algeria, specifically on oil and gas as well, and Petro SA is engaging with the National Oil Company to see if there are assets that can be identified where Petro SA can either buy equity or to have near producing and or producing assets. From afar, we have also looked at our relationship with Venezuela. We have secured blocks, and we are currently working on specific blocks in order for us to initiate production from Venezuela. So it is a very active, and Petro SA is already working in Venezuela. Then in terms of gas, we have a very healthy relationship with Mozambique. We are actually having a gas commission which promotes the development and trading in gas between the two countries, and most of the gas that we are importing, in fact all of it, comes from Mozambique. Namibia has also potential for gas. We have initiated a gas commission. We are specifically looking at how to commercialize the Kudu gas project. But as you are aware, gas is very complicated. If you want to commercialize gas, you need to have a market, a captive market, and an anchor customer for that particular asset. And secondly, you also need to have a substantive market for you to be able, sorry, a substantive volumes of gas for you to exploit a particular asset. So the relationship, the issue on the Kudu gas is actually stalled by the fact that we need to make sure that we have sufficient gas that would sustain an industry for at least a minimum of 25 years. We also have a very good relationship with the Republic of Angola. We signed an agreement on the oil and gas, And at this particular time, Petro SA is negotiating with Sanango in order to access or explore particularly oil and gas blocks in that in Angola. We are aware that our companies such as Sasol are also currently importing substantive amount of crude oil from Angola, and that we that is assisting us in diversifying our sources. Rather than just focusing mainly on the Middle East, we are also getting substantive imports from Angola and also substantive imports from Nigeria. In general, in terms of crude trading, as I've already indicated, we are increasing our imports from Angola and Nigeria, particularly on the continent, and we are also increasing our imports of gas from Mozambique. Then in terms of developments within the energy sector from looking at a broader perspective, South Africa is, South Africa is, the Department of Energy has signed an agreement with China to cooperate in the oil and gas sector. We are aware that China is one of the leading countries which are operating at an international scale to access different resources or assets in terms of oil and gas. We then coined an agreement where we facilitated the relationship between Petro SA and Sinopec. Subsequently, in towards the end of last year, Petro SA and Sinopec signed an MOU that would allow Petro SA to explore with, in conjunction with Sinopec-related companies in the upstream. The reason why we are looking at assistance in or cooperation in terms of exploration and production on the upstream is the fact that upstream is very expensive business, and it's also very high risk. If you invest in there, your chances of getting in returns to investment are very minimal. So to minimize our cost and risk, it is important to always go in a joint venture with companies that have extensive expertise to ensure that we minimize our risk. Then secondly, we are aware that Sinopec is one of the top 500 companies globally. It operates internationally, and it has also substantial financial resources. So we have, Petro SA have indicated to have cooperation with them in the development of Mutombo project and generally in terms of wholesale trading and distribution of petroleum products. Then another important relationship that Petro SA has developed, as I've already indicated, is with PDVSA in Venezuela. It has enabled Petro SA to have access to near producing and producing assets. In terms of exploration, it is a lot it's cheaper and a lot it's less riskier to go for near producing and producing assets, because already there is an indication that there are reserves in a particular area, and what is required is the appraisal of the particular area or appraisal of wells, or you know, just investing a little bit to make sure that you can extract the resources. But there is usually the you have at least certainty that the product is available, whereas on the exploration is extremely high. You will be operating on a vision globe, and you are not sure whether there are any reasonable assets or not. And for you to do the exercise of exploration, it's a highly expensive business. And hence, the focus of Petro SA on producing and near producing assets. So that is in a nutshell what we are doing in terms of the hydrocarbons area. And what we did was just to give you an overview of some of the important relations, but we do have other relations with most of the countries on the continent. With respect to the climate change, I have shifted the block, the sequence of the slide, so that I begin with an introduction to say our issue related to climate change has actually been driven by what the president has indicated in terms of our need to reduce the carbon emissions. The president, through the Carbon Action Accord, said we need to ensure that we reduce our GHG emissions by 34% by 2020 and 32% by 2025. In response to this pronouncement by our president, we have really seriously looked at the energy sector, which in general, as I've indicated, contributes about 80% of emissions. And to do that, we had to aggressively review our energy policy to ensure that we incorporate low carbon energy carriers, particularly the renewable energy and the nuclear component. So, from an international perspective, we have approached it into a multi-pronged approach. One, we have engaged in a multilateral relationship. In terms of our multilateral relationship, we have looked at all the international institutions and multilateral organizations that are targeting the clean energy initiative. One of those is the Partnership for Energy Efficiency Cooperation, and that particular partnership is a global initiative where different countries are actually coming together, developing capacity in energy efficiency, making recommendations for policy development and deployment for energy efficiency. We are aware that energy efficiency is one of the low-hanging fruits. If you use energy efficiency, you actually reduce your emissions, and secondly, you are also creating a reserve of your own particular energy without investing in production itself. You are conserving, and that conservation would result in new forms of energy being released for other activities, and we reduce your investment in creating new generation capacity. Then we, as a country which is much more dependent on coal, which has got high carbon emission, we have also, as a department, joined the Carbon Sequestration Leadership Forum. The Carbon Sequestration Leadership Forum is a forum which is looking at how we can actually capture, store, and or use carbon dioxide so that we reduce our carbon footprint. It really is quite strategic because, you know, although the technology is new, there are indications that the CCS technology will significantly contribute to lowering our CO2 emissions. Projects are already underway. For example, in Norway, Sasol has made an investment with a Norwegian company into a project which will be probably launched in May, where they are going to initiate the commercialization of a CCS plant. We are aware that countries such as the United Kingdom, the US, are also, and Australia are also very much involved in the CCS technology. And currently, there is a possibility that commercialization will take soon, but as a new technology, usually it takes a very long for any particular technology to be efficiently deployed. But South Africa is a carbon intensive economy, has also joined the Carbon Sequestration Leadership Forum, and it is also very much actively involved. Currently, we have also established the carbon the CCS Center under the Central Energy Fund or SANET. The CCS Center is being supported by countries like the Australia, the Germany, UK, and the EU. We have already developed an atlas which actually identifies or maps out potential areas for carbon storage. We are also currently in the phase two of the initiative, where we are looking at definitive identified areas to see whether there is a definitive storage capacity for the CCS. And the center has also established a capacity building initiative, where they are going to universities and setting up chairs that will be responsible for training graduates into the CCS-related capabilities. And I think one of the chairs is at the University of the Witwatersrand, and it's being funded by Alstom. We also have, I think, one of the chairs in Potchefstroom, I think. But we are really developing the state of readiness for the country to be able to acquire the technology and deploy it using our own skilled people. And to do that, we have already initiated the training program with the assistance of our international partners and the government. Then another important area where we have also generated a significant a significant relationship and also benefited as a country is through the Clean Energy Ministerial Forum. The Clean Energy Ministerial Forum was created by the U.S. Department of Energy, and there are 24 member countries who are also the major economic forum. South Africa has been identified on that forum, and it's the only African company African country participating on the forum as the clean energy ambassador for the continent. The forum has come up with 11 initiatives where they are trying at a political level to support the deployment of initiatives that would usher in clean energy technologies in general. For example, we have a multi-solar and wind working group. That group is developing a wind atlas for the whole world, and it's also developing a solar atlas for the whole world. The importance of having such atlas is that it will assist particularly developing countries that don't have sufficient funding to have specific sites which are identified as suitable for investment. And the same applies for wind, and that would benefit us as South Africa. It will also benefit the region, and it will also benefit some of the small countries on the continent that do not have the financial muscle to do their own atlases. We also have another partnership called the Global Superior Energy Performance Partnership. Mainly, it looks into reduction of or introduction of energy efficiency in the industrial sector, both commercial and heavy industry, particularly in the production processes. And it also specifically focuses on the cement industry, the steel industry, and energy management in general. In terms of energy management, it looks at how, for example, an industry can manage the deployment of clean energy technologies, manage the deployment of energy efficiency mechanisms in order to reduce electricity consumption and generally energy consumption in their both consumption as well as production processes. Then the other initiative is on the electric vehicle.
You're still a bit fast.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you, Jay. Honorable Jay.
You can only grease my palm by slowing down.
Okay. Another important initiative that this Clean Energy Ministerial is focusing on is the electric vehicle initiative. There is a target that in the next 10 years, we need to have about 20 million electric vehicles globally. That would significantly reduce the carbon emissions from the electric vehicles. In South Africa, we have an electric vehicle initiative that is being run under SANERI with the support of our Department of Science and Technology. A model has already been developed, and they are currently looking at commercialization. Engagement in the initial electric vehicle initiative would assist us as a department and as a country to ensure that we have policies in place that would promote the deployment of electric vehicles. We are aware of the sufficient funding requirements for commercialization of electric vehicles, and we are also aware of the other international partners that can partner with us, particularly for pilot projects. The initiative is relatively new. It's a year old, but we already have linked up our SANEDI to the initiative, and they are actively involved. They are also, as SANEDI, working with the International Energy Agency on the electric vehicle initiative. So what is required as of now is to ensure that we have sufficient funding to be able to commercialize our electric vehicle, and we also have our regulatory framework in place to make sure that we promote the development of a pilot phase of the electric vehicle initiative. Then, as I have already indicated, one of the Clean Energy Ministerial initiatives is the Carbon Capture Use and Storage Action Group. South Africa is a member of that. We have co-opted our SANERI, and we have also co-opted SASO to be participating on that particular action group. The reason we have taken in SASO on the initiative, SASO is a board member of the Carbon Capture and Storage Center, which is owned by the, which is under the South African, which is under SANEDI, And we also have, SASO has got investments in Norway, as I've indicated before, in CCS-related investments, and they are also actively participating on the international scene. So from an industry perspective, SASO has been co-opted into this group, and the CCS center has also been co-opted, and we are benefiting from the developments that are coming out of the initiative, and specifically the UK has significantly supported our initiative and is keen to walk the road with us on CCS, like other countries such as the US as well and China. Then we also have another initiative on the solar-led energy access program. This particular program is looking at development of a solar lighting system. The target is that once the initiative is successful and they've identified a cheap, efficient solar light, they want to deploy that to at least 100 million households. So there is an investigation and research being funded to ensure that we come up with an efficient but very cheap solar light that can be deployed to particularly low-income countries and also low-income households to enhance our energy access and to ensure that with the access to those such type of lights, we can also assist particularly children in the rural areas to have access to lighting and to ensure that they can also just have study as much as children that are linked to electricity or to national grids. Then we also have another important initiative on the clean energy education and empowerment for women initiative. The reason why that initiative was introduced is that we now have a new energy technologies that are coming in, particularly renewable energy. And women are the ones that are close to use of energy and to using energy-related appliances, especially for cooking, for space heating, and also for generally household use. And the idea was that it is important that women should actually take a lead in the deployment and also research activities related to these renewable energy initiatives or the clean energy initiatives, so that women have a force and a say in the energy sector. And to do that, it was realized that it is very important to make sure that we have a specific promotion and agenda to ensure that we attract young scholars, young learners to take the energy route and particularly the clean energy related courses, so that they can become leaders in the new energy dispensation. In South Africa, the initiative has already been rolled out. Our deputy minister is leading that particular initiative, and towards the end of last year, the initiative was launched, and several companies are participating, and they are encouraged to make sure that in their bursary schemes, their corporate social responsibility, they set aside some funds to assist in training of particularly young ladies and even older ladies as well to acquire competencies in clean energy technologies and clean energy initiatives. Another important initiative is the Smart Grid Initiative. The Smart Grid Initiative basically talks to the issues of the efficiencies within the transmission system of the grid. Because we are going to have renewable energy and other forms of energy introduced to the grid, you need to have an intelligent grid that will be able to accept energy flows from different sources at different times. As you are aware, renewable energy is intermittent, particularly your solar and your wind. For you to be able to take them in the system, you need to have special transmission lines that will be intelligent enough to be able to accept the inflow of energy at intermittent times. In other countries, what is actually happening is that you can actually have your PV solar on your roof. So even as a household consumer, you should be in a position where you at times use the energy yourself and at times be able to transmit energy back into the grid. So for you to be able to do that, you need to make sure that your grid system is sufficiently intelligent to be able to make the switch from flowing to the household or flowing out of the household, and also to be receiving intermittent supplies of labor. And to do that, we have that smart grid initiative. In South Africa, we have a unit within SANED which is particularly engaged in the smart grid initiative. They are basically looking at how other countries are doing it and to also investigate the possibility of South Africa going the same route. Especially given that we are going to have 42% of our new generation capacity from renewable energy, it is very important that we look at the smart grid initiative. Then the super efficient appliance deployment initiative is looking at generally all the appliances that we use in our households, at work, etc., etc. We need to make sure that we have policies that promote the use of efficient appliances. Those appliances should start even from your fridge, from your electrical iron, from your television, your computers, and so on and so forth. So they are developing a mechanism or a methodology where we'll be able to, one, identify the efficient appliances, be able to develop a methodology for measuring their efficiencies, and be able to compute and say, if you use this type of appliances, then we will be able to save so much. And if we save so much, then we need to then say, how do we now promote our own, our consumers, to move from inefficient appliances to efficient appliances. We have different, for example, countries such as Mexico, they have introduced an initiative where the government has taken off all the old fridges, subsidized people to buy new fridges, and that has considerably reduced the consumption of energy. And the president of the country has been leading the initiative, and it has significantly reduced the consumption of electricity. Then in South Africa, we have also we have our own energy efficiency program, which is looking at super efficient appliances, labeling of your appliances, even including motor vehicles. So we are on track, and we are learning from what other countries are doing, and we will be in a position to deploy the super efficient appliance initiative. Then, so that is a perspective from the multilateral. From a bilateral perspective, in terms of clean energy, we have also established a strategic relationship with countries that are leaders in the renewable energy initiative or the renewable energy initiative. Recently, we have signed an MOU with the Kingdom of Lesotho, which basically strengthens our relationship in terms of renewable energy. We are aware that Lesotho has got wind and hydro potential, and that the relationship between the two countries will assist Lesotho to be able to deploy its renewable energy initiative. And the importance of that is that the Integrated Energy Resource Plan has got an allowance for South Africa to import clean energy from neighboring countries. So by establishing and having a relationship with, for example, the Kingdom of Lesotho, we are also providing them a platform to be able to exploit and deploy their own renewable energy initiative. With the relationship, it will also create a market for their energy, and it will also be a contribution to our Southern African Development Cooperation Initiative in the energy sector. Then we have also signed an MOU with the Democratic Republic of Congo with respect to the Grand Finger. If we are to reduce our carbon footprint, we need to seriously look at other areas or other countries within the region that can contribute to the clean energy initiative, and the Grand Finger is one such project that will be able to generate at least approximately 40,000 megawatts of hydroelectricity. If that project is successful, it will actually contribute significantly energy access not only to South Africa but to the region and the continent. The current analysis of the project is that it will be able to supply Southern Africa, it will be able to supply Central Africa, and it will be able to supply some countries in West Africa. So it is quite an ambitious project. If it is successful, it is going to really enhance the African sector energy footprint.
It has to be successful.
It is.
Please don't say if.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. So it is one of those strategic projects that South Africa supports, and it will really reduce our carbon footprint and energy access. We have also looked through the North-South relationship at the Kingdom of Denmark. The Kingdom of Denmark is a leader in the wind energy technology and deployment. In fact, their energy policy is actually oriented towards dependence on clean energy mainly. So as a leader in the wind energy, we have a relationship and signed an MOU, and they have assisted us in developing our wind atlas. They are also assisting us in skills development, and they are also assisting, we are looking at focusing on technology transfer. They are also assisting us in developing our wind awareness campaign, and that kind of relationship is very strategic to our deployment of wind technology in the country in line with the Integrated Energy Resource Plan. The Kingdom has also given its assistance on energy efficiency, and we have actually developed our strategies with the assistance. We have also been assisted by Sweden and by Switzerland on the energy efficiency. I've just highlighted a few of the relationships that we had, but we have received significant support from our Northern Hemisphere strategic partners. As I have also indicated, we have a relationship with the People's Republic of China in the energy sector. That particular relationship assists us in accessing finance for the expensive exploration, particularly on the upstream. It also assists us in accessing finance in the development of Mtombo project. So where we need a financial assistance from other countries in order to augment our own resources. So we really have developed a significant relationship with China, and we are only now in the process of implementing to ensure that we benefit from that particular relationship. The Chinese are also keen to work with us in the renewable energy sector, and we have developed an energy forum, and through the energy forum, we actually meet once a year, and we invite companies that are in the renewable energy space to work to cooperate with companies in the renewable energy space within China. And a number of companies have already signed agreement. The Central Energy Fund has also signed an agreement with some of the Chinese companies. And that relationship, I think, is significantly successful, and it has resulted in an implementation on specific results with specific companies operating together with Chinese companies in the South African energy space. The important issue that we are highlighting in that relationship is the need to ensure that we transfer the technology, we develop the skills and the capabilities so that we will have in the long run, the manufacturing of some of those renewable technologies residing in the country. In as I have already indicated, in our relationship with most of the countries, we are really promoting issues related to mutual benefits and particularly creation of employment in any initiatives that we are engaging in. We are also looking at the issues related to localization. We are also looking into issues related to technology transfer and skills development. So most of the projects that we promote, they are supposed to comply with those important issues for job creation, industrialization, technology transfer, and development of competencies. And we have highlighted that with all the the relationships that we have concluded, and we are in the implementation phases, and we ensure that those imperatives are met. One of the initiatives that the department has engaged in with respect to the clean energy initiative is that the Minister of Energy called the African Energy Ministerial Conference, and that at that ministerial conference we had about 45 countries represented by their ministers and deputy ministers, and basically the ministers discussed the issue of the clean energy initiative on the continent, the energy development in general, and how Africa needs to position itself within the context of the new dispensation of promoting sustainable energy carriers. The general conclusion of that meeting was that the African ministers were committed to the deployment of sustainable energy programs on the continent, but they were mindful of the issue of funding, of technology transfer, and also of skills transfer. And generally, it also gave some kind of a mandate to the Clean Energy Ministerial President, who is currently the Minister of Mozambique, that South Africa is promoting clean energy and that it wishes to see the deployment, but it will need a lot of financial assistance from other stakeholders in order to be able to go the renewable energy and clean energy route in general. Now, in terms of nuclear, the department has relations with multilateral bodies that promote the safe use of nuclear and adhere to the principles of non-proliferation. We are members of the international, the IAEA, I always confuse it with the International Energy Agency. That particular organization is a global organization where all members that are involved in the nuclear space, particularly non-proliferation, cooperate and work together to form policies, to develop kind of regulations on how to manage the sector. So South Africa is significantly benefited through that organization. Most of our regulators are trained there. The department itself is trained there. The members of the private sector also participate and are trained there. The significant and strategic importance of the organization is also the promotion of safety issues related to nuclear. For example, we have had the Fukushima nuclear disaster, and the IAEA has actually taken a lead in informing the member countries of the development of the Fukushima. They've also assisted in bringing awareness to what is happening with the nuclear sector and also what is happening in Japan. So basically we do have a healthy relationship with such international organizations. We also have bilateral agreements with specific countries with respect to nuclear. We have an agreement with Algeria. We have an agreement with Korea. We also have an agreement with China. We have an agreement with the U.S. I'm just here mentioning new countries that we are working with now. And then we also have an agreement. You know, we are developing an agreement with Uganda, which also wants to initiate a nuclear program in their respective country. The department has also benefited from exchange of information, capacity building, and bilateral and multilateral relations with respect to nuclear, and we are cooperating with, mainly, if you can see, the cooperation is with the developed countries, because those are the countries that are engaged in nuclear, countries such as France, the U.S., Russia, and China. So those are the main countries that are driving the nuclear program. So in a nutshell, that is what I can say about the nuclear. In fact, what has also happened, sorry, I had forgotten to include that, is that we are also a member of the African organization that is going to be promoting the non-proliferation of nuclear on the continent. The organization is being formed now, and South Africa has been mandated to take a lead. Another important strategic element of our international coordination is access to funding. given that we are going to be engaging in a doubling of our energy capacity in the country, it is very important that we have funding, particularly soft loans, to be able to ensure that our policy is implemented. In that regard, we have initiated engagements at an international level where we can try to secure soft loans to be used in the deployment of our clean energy initiatives. Recently, I think on the 7th of December, we signed a declaration of intent on the South African Renewable Initiative. The declaration of intent was signed with the Kingdom of Denmark, the United Kingdom, Germany, Norway, and the European Investment Bank. Basically, the declaration of intent commits the countries to support the South African agenda of renewable energy through funding and provision of soft loans. Currently, the project was being driven by the Department of Trade and Industry, and we are in the transition process where the Department of Energy will be leading on that particular project. In the declaration of intent, we have indicated that the assistance that we are going to receive should facilitate job creation, technology transfer, and localization. So mainly we expect the member countries to provide soft loans to the country, which will then be used to deploy renewable energy initiatives. The National Treasury is currently developing a funding mechanism where the money would flow through, and then it will then be used to fund renewable energy initiatives in the country. Another important stakeholder where we have actually looked at funding, a specific funding initiative to assist in the deployment of the energy project is China. In 2010, we signed an agreement with the China Development Bank, and the China Development Bank also committed to set aside 20 billion for investment in the energy sector. There are current discussions on how the funds can be moved into the country and the conditions in terms of using that particular fund. We are working together with our colleagues in the National Treasury to ensure that we operationalize that agreement and that we begin to see the 20 billion being transferred to South Africa for use in the energy sector. Another important element is capacity building. If we do not have the South African skills to be able to be employed in the energy initiative, the country will lose. So it is very important that all our agreements ensure that they build within them the issue of capacity building and skills development for the energy sector. All the agreements that we have signed, they have included a component of capacity building, where we send officials for training, we facilitate that there be training for our SOEs, we also facilitate training of private individuals and exchange of information and capacity building of our institutions of higher learning and research institutes. So in that regard, we have the institutions such as the International Atomic Energy Agency, as I've already indicated. The International Energy Agency also plays a very significant role in capacity building. We have just signed an implementation, an agreement with them last year, and an implementation agreement which details specific areas of focus in terms of capacity building. For instance, we are in the process of developing the Integrated Energy Resource Plan. For us to successfully execute that project, we need skills and competencies in modeling, in forecasting, and also in just developing the model itself. While we have institutions such as the CSIR to assist, it is also important that for the future in the running of those programs, the department and our own SOEs are also capacitated to ensure that we will be able to do the modeling in the future on our own. So institutions such as the International Energy Agency provide us with such a training facilities and also to enhance our capabilities. As I have also indicated to you, we are seriously looking at the carbon capture and storage as a coal-driven energy economy, and to do that, to deploy the technology, we seriously need to ensure that our state of readiness in terms of skills is up to scratch, so that when we do commercialize, we have sufficient skills, research institutes, the necessary capacity to be able to discharge that responsibility effectively. The same also applies to renewable energy. And all those issues related to capacity building, each bilateral, we focus on capacity building. Our multilateral relations also have a component of capacity building, and it is a very important element of our relationship. Then with respect to the regional initiatives, there was a request that there is a need for us to present on the regional initiative. South Africa, as a country, through the Department of Energy, is a member of the Southern African Development Corporation. We, as the Minister of Energy, is a member of the Energy, the SADC Energy Committee. And annually, the energy ministers meet to discuss issues related to the energy sector in the region. The last meeting was held in Botswana last year. And on the energy ministers' meeting, there are specific projects that have been approved. Such projects include the infrastructure development master plan. Currently, the SADC unit is working on that, and member countries are contributing towards the development of such a plan. We also have an initiative where there is alignment of regulatory policies to ensure trade and investment regionally, and that is led by the Regional Electricity Regulatory Authority. What is important to note about that particular initiative is that there are projects in the region which need to be maybe across the borders, or which would, if they are worked together, which would need if an investor is going to invest in the region, they look at the policies in the different countries. For instance, if the pricing policy in country A is such that the investor does not have an incentive to invest in that particular country, then the lack of investment in that country will have an effect on the region at large, as I will show in terms of how the region is operating. So it is very important that we look at our regional policies to make sure that we put in place policies that will attract investment in the energy sector. We also put in place policies that would attract even the development of the energy sector locally. We harmonize our policies to ensure that when we trade, we don't have impediments or barriers to trade. So it is very important that the ministers have promoted the development of the Electricity Regulatory Authority to ensure that we trade and we invest in the region and we promote the development of the energy sector within the region. Another important element of the pronouncement of the minister was the issue related to capacity building in the sector. South Africa was mandated to assist particularly in the clean development mechanism and also the establishment of designated national authorities in the region. So our designated national authority in the department is assisting the different member states establishing their own authorities and also assisting them in just the familiarization with the clean development mechanism and helping them to establish their own CDM projects in the respective countries. Then another important project that the SADC region is currently working on is the project on biofuels. They are developing a biofuel strategy for the region, but an important debate that is also being conducted at the same time is the relationship between biofuels and food security. I think next month, in March, they are going to have a workshop that will be looking at biofuels and food security and also have data collection in order to firm up the biofuel strategy for the region. So we are basically, as a region, we are also moving into sustainable energy carriers, and we are promoting those energy carriers and the region is working collectively to ensure that our carbon footprint is actually reduced by the deployment of such initiatives as the biofuel strategy. Then another, the region also promotes interconnectivity. Basically, for us to be able to trade in electricity, we need to be interconnected. And for us to be interconnected, there is a need for investment in our transmission lines to make sure that, one, they are efficiently managed, they are up to standard, and that we are connected. There are already different projects that have been identified which would assist us in having an interconnected region, which would allow us to trade efficiently in the region. Oh my God. Sorry, Mr. Adeko. Okay. So that's the demand and supply situation in the region. We have listed all the countries. We have indicated what is coming from each country and the peak demand for each country, and our reserve capacity, which is about 10.2%. As you can see, the reserve capacity is very minimal, and most of the countries are producing less than what they are consuming, and therefore there is a definite need for us to be trading regionally in order for us to be able to move the electricity from a region where there is excess supply to a region where there is demand.
Fast again. Can you take us through a little bit slow?
Okay. Thank you. So this is the demand and supply situation. And the statistics are for 2010-2011. It gives you an indication of installed capacity as of 2011, and also the available capacity, because the installed capacity and the available capacity is usually different. It depends on the maintenance, the operational efficiency of the power stations in the different countries. So as you can see, our installed capacity and our available capacity, they are different. You look at Angola, the installed capacity is 1,494 megawatts, but the actual capacity available is 1,169 with a deficit of 325, which means it's not available. But their peak demand is 795, which means they are able to export. But basically also, when you look at that, they can't export if we now go to interconnectivity, because they are not interconnected. They are now not in a position for other countries to access that energy. So that is basically what the table is showing. If you look at Botswana, the installed capacity is 202 megawatts, the available capacity is 190, and in installed minus available is 12. So that's how the road. So the total installed capacity, the South African Southern African power pool is 56,188. The available capacity is 49,996. The difference is 6,220, and our peak demand as a collective is 45,624.
Compared to 49 that's available.
Compared to the available, compared to 49 that is available. But the reason why it's not available for some countries is the transmission element. The transmission is not efficient, so we are not able to trade regionally. And then the other issue is, so we also have losses in terms of your transmission. And then in terms of trading, when we go to the integration of the system, you will see that we still have a lot of projects that we need to do in order to enhance our interconnectivity. So there is a problem there. We may have a little bit of capacity, but it's not there. In fact, if you look at the 2010 peak demand was 45,624 megawatts, but the actual capacity required is about 50,278. So the deficit in the region is 310. So in terms of the power connected, where we can actually trade and deal with each other, as I've indicated that some of the connections are not yet there. The total installed capacity is 53,000. The available capacity is 47,632. The installed minus available is 5,769. The peak for 2010 was 43,722. The deficit is 550 megawatts. Given that the generally, if you look at the economic growth of the region, you look at countries such as Mozambique, their economic growth are actually steep and high. You look at ourselves, although the economic growth was low, it is anticipated that the growth and our demand for electricity will also increase. You look at the economies such as Angola, their economic growth is on an upward slope. You look at Botswana, the same applies. So in the near future, we are actually going to have a challenge in terms of meeting our energy needs. If we are not able to meet our energy needs, it will, in the medium term, arrest economic development, economic growth, and our own success as a region. Then what we have there is also an indication of the plant capacity versus forecast of all the sub-members, you know, giving an indication from 2010 and the projection, the forecast for 2016. Basically, what that first graph is indicating to us is that by 2014, we have critical for capacity, and we need to ensure that we begin to build in sufficient reserve margins. If we look at the diagram below as well, you also have your energy forecast and energy planned in terms of your investment in the sector. You can actually see that the energy forecast, which is your blue, it's higher than the energy planned. So we are also going to, by 2016, we are going to have a critical challenge in terms of our energy in the region. So it is very important that the energy projects that are planned in the region, they are actually executed on time to avoid the potential negative shortage of electricity in the region, which may actually negatively affect the economic development and the success of the region. So we from an energy perspective, the focus that we need to seriously take investments in the different energy projects in the region is a matter of aging. In terms of the power trading, as I have indicated, power trading in the region is possible, but there is a need to create an enabling environment. The enabling environment needs to talk to issues of ensuring that countries that have committed to execute specific projects by specific timeline is done. There are transmission lines and interconnectivity related projects are executed. That our policies in terms of returns to investment for any investors that want to operate in the region are aligned, and that we ensure that there is also not a reasonable return to investment in order for us to attract investors in the energy sector. That our policies and regulations, particularly for electricity, are aligned, and that is happening through the RERA, which is the Electricity Regulatory Authority. But anyway, I can still talk. So it is very, very important. We are at a point where the region is about 600, over 200 million households. And we, so in terms of our population, we are poised to have a significant increase in economic growth. There are specific and important strategic projects for the energy sector, and it is very critical that we initiate and ensure that those projects are executed. And the only way to do it is to make sure that governments in the respective region promote investment in those energy projects and ensure that they are successful. Then in terms of the transmission projects that are in place as of now, we have the DRC Zambia line. If we look on, I think it's slide number 26 on our printout, that transmission line needs to be in place to ensure that there is a relation, there is transmission between the DRC and Zambia. And once the electricity gets into Zambia, it can go to Zimbabwe, to South Africa, it can also go to Mozambique. But for that to happen, it is important that the transmission line in the other countries are operational and they are efficiently operated. Then we also have the Sizabona line, which is an interconnector between Zambia, Zimbabwe, Namibia, and Angola. These four countries, they also want to be interconnected among themselves as well, so that small red line which connects in the four countries, they want to be independent of ourselves as well, so that they can trade among themselves. So there is that particular project which is supposed to be initiated in 2013. Then we also have the Mozambique-Malawi interconnector as well, which is a project in the pipeline. It has been in the pipeline for long. That's why I was saying that it is very important that we ensure that as countries we execute the proposed projects on time to ensure that we can trade regionally in electricity. Then for 2014, there is also the proposed Zambia-Tanzania transmission line, which would also assist in connecting Tanzania. And once you connect Tanzania to Zambia, it is very strategic. Tanzania is also a member of the East African Power Pool. It means that we are also connected to the East African Power Pool, and we will be able to take electricity from that region in the event that there is excess in that region. We are aware that the countries such as Tanzania, they have made huge discoveries of gas, and if gas comes into play and the Tanzania-Zambia interconnector has been developed, we can take clean energy via Tanzania into the region. And we can also take clean energy from the East African Power Pool via Tanzania into the SADC region. So it is a very important and strategic line which can link us up to as far as East Africa. Then we also have the Mozambique, the backbone transmission line. That backbone transmission line is going to be linked to a lot of projects in Mozambique. If that line is, the interconnector is put in place, which requires a lot of funding, and fortunately the Mozambicans in November last year, they had their feasibility study commissioned. It has now specific amounts that are required in order to execute that. They have already secured some funding related to that particular project, and it is a potential project which could be possibly implemented soon, and that would enhance the transmission system strengthen the interconnector between the two countries. The importance of this is that Zambia is making huge, has actually made extra huge gas discoveries, and if that gas is converted into electricity, it will also allow us to tap into the clean energy. Then secondly, Mozambique has got hydropower projects that are also on the table for development, this interconnector will allow us to import that particular power into our country as well. Then in South Africa, we are also strengthening our system. You see the blue line. We are committed to doing that by 2015, and we also have an interconnector between Namibia and Angola. As you are aware, Angola has also huge gas reserves, and if that is implemented, it means that we'll be able to get power from Angola to Namibia, and that power can come to the region, because Namibia is connected to Botswana, to South Africa, to Zimbabwe as well. So then the electricity can get into the power pool, and then it will be able to be utilized by the region, and in the long run we'll be able to meet our deficit. So all these projects are in the pipeline. What is critical is that they need to secure funding. They need to be properly packaged in a way that would attract investment, and that the different governments within the respective countries need to ensure that they promote investments in these energy projects and that they are prioritized. Then the overview of the regulatory decision for cross-border deals. We are currently trading in electricity, and what we have there is the country A, which is an exporting country, and country B, which is a transit country, and country C, which is an importing country. So I have tried to make sure that we have the conditions that are required, that must be a licensed generator, a licensed transmission company, a licensed exporter, approved sale and willing agreements. You must have approved sales and willing agreements. Then you review your financial impact if seller or supplier capable of the customers. So the generating country, the country that is receiving, and then the country that is transmitting. The reason why I put this deal is just to indicate why it is important to harmonize our policies, to make sure that each country has got the necessary regulatory framework which allows the company to comply with the transmission system and ensure that it meets its requirements. If you have a country which cannot meet its commitment, then it really offsets the whole transmission system within the region, and it is very critical that as governments in respective countries, we make sure that we comply with the requirements, and that the power purchase agreements are adhered to, that the respective countries pay for their electricity, and that the transmission lines are in place and operational, and that the willing agreement is in place, that the tariffs related to the transmission are paid, and all those things can be done through the harmonization of policies and the ensuring that countries respect the cross-border deals that we have been signed. So in a nutshell, that's how the transmission, the cross-border deals are coined, and those are the parameters that operate those border deals for the exporter, the importer, and the transiting country. Okay. So in terms of the specific projects that approved in the energy sector within the region, we have the transmission backbone in Mozambique. It is a transmission line in Mozambique that would allow electricity to be moved from Mozambique within the region, and I've shown it on the other slide. We have the HBC, we also have the North Bank project in Mozambique as well. We have the Pandankua hydropower project in Mozambique again. We also have the Patoka hydro project in Zambia and Zimbabwe. We have the Kafua Gorge lower in the Zambia as well. We have the Kariba South Extension in Zimbabwe. We have the Kudu gas power project in Namibia. But what is very important is that all these projects, they are listed here. But what is critical is that member countries need to ensure that investments in these projects take place to ensure that we meet our power requirements. Because some of the projects have been on the table for long, but no investments have been committed because the environment maybe is not conducive to investment. So it is very critical through the region to ensure that we urge member countries to to invest in their respective projects to ensure that we have adequate supply rather than counting projects that are not going to be operationalized. Then other projects, is the Zambia, Tanzania, Kenya interconnector, I have already shown it on the map. Then there's Mozambique-Malawi interconnector, I've also shown it on the map. Then there's Namibia-Angola interconnector, the DRC-Angola interconnector, the Sizabona, which is Zambia, Zimbabwe, Angola, and Namibia, and Botswana, I've also shown it on the map. Then we have the Central Transmission Corridor in Zimbabwe, it was not reflected on the map. Then the Kafua-Livingstone transmission upgrades. These are upgrades within Zambia itself. So as you can see, as a region, the energy ministers have identified projects of priority for the region. They are encouraging each other to invest in those particular projects. They are also encouraging our regulators to make sure that we have policies in place which would enable us to attract investors and that we do our best to ensure the efficiency operational, the efficient operation of the transmission systems, and that we adhere to the principles that are being highlighted. Just to give you an indication of, we have just tried to extrapolate some figures of the amounts required for specific projects. For example, the Kudu Gas is looking at about 600 million. Mamabula is another power project in Botswana. It was about 3,000, it's about 3 billion. Then we have the Kafue Lower, which is about 1,500 million. Pandangua, 2,000 to 2,500 million. Mosaite Coal, which is also in Mozambique, it requires that amount. The Eastern Corridor requires that. The Western Corridor requires that. The Sizabona requires 385 million.
What's Eastern and Western Corridor?
Those are projects within the eastern part of the country in Mozambique. Mm. Then the Western Corridor, that will be the one which was supposed to be the Inga 2 and Inga 3 in the DRC. Then the Malawi interconnector, which is about 93 million. So those were the figures that I was able to put fingers on with respect to some of the projects that have been identified. As you can see, there are quite substantive amounts required to invest, and it is very critical that we make sure that investments in these particular projects in respective countries are successful. In conclusion, I can say that the DOE has initiated both multilateral and bilateral engagements that focus in ensuring that the country's access to secure, affordable, and accessible energy carriers. We are also focusing on access to funding, access to technology, and we are also specifically looking at technology transfer. Skills and capacity building is very strategic to the deployment of our new technologies, and particularly the technology-intensive projects. We also promote localization and job creation in our bilateral and multilateral engagement. And above all, we embrace the continent and we drive the SADC region. We are also guided by the South-South cooperation and the North-South in line with our TICO policy. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Marabo. Thanks very much. Your input was quite illustrious. Can we take questions? I'm sure honorable members will appreciate that we do have hundreds of questions. Ntate Mloto, down the line, Lucas, Tate Hailing, Tate Ross, and then Tate Khadev will round up for this round.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a few questions without too many statements prefacing it. I'm concerned about whether you are engaging with the refineries in South Africa to determine what would be the most likely impact of sanctions that could be imposed on Iran. Whether they have thought through the possibility of diversifying to other sources, because I'm not sure about whether this is a UN sanction thing and whether it has extraterritorial reach or it's left to different sovereignty to determine the path for themselves. The second question would be, I'd be interested in Mamabula. What is the status of Mamabula? Because I've learned that Mamabula, when it was initially constructed, 25% of energy was going to be consumed in Botswana. It's a small country. 75% somewhere else, I wouldn't mention where. And it has its own politics. So I just want to understand what's the status of this project, what's happening to the project. And thirdly, I agree with you. You know, and there's a study that was done by the World Bank to indicate that lack of power investment is a constraint to economic growth in Africa. But I'm going to relate to one a particular experience that I had in another capacity where I'm deployed. I'm not conflicted because I'm not benefiting. The profits are not coming to me, but to another entity which is linked to government. The challenge becomes negotiating and closing the project. They take long, to the extent that you find that investors end up pulling out because their money is tied up to this thing. The process is just too long to experience financial close. And I think for me, that's an area that ministers within this portfolio need to talk about, because governments don't have money in Africa to do all these projects by themselves. They will need investment. For instance, I'm told that the Botswana side, Kabarabasa, the land from Botswana to South Africa, there's intermittent supply of energy because the substations have not been upgraded or there's not been reinvestment of substations on the Mozambican side. So it's important, I think, that we need to harness the muscle and the capacity that is there, the capital that is there within the financial sector. The other quick one would be, sorry, Chairperson, it's on Inga. I just want to establish where, no, it's not, that one will come later. On Project Mutombo, you say Project Mutombo, the Chinese are in talks with PetroSA to establish whether they can assist in the building of Project Mutombo. My question is, let's assume the Chinese end up acquiring a significant stake in Project Mutombo. The issues of ownership, at what stage would they invest with PetroSA? I know it's a detailed question, but on a principle level, are we not going to hand over the project to the Chinese, build a own project, and then come up, I'm just giving an example, then you have a situation where it's, you know, you are not in control of that arrangement. Chairperson, I think that should suffice for now. Yes.
I can see what you say, I've got a lot in your plate.
Thanks, Mr. Chairperson. I think we appreciate what has been done today, because this department, energy, has been neglected for many years. And when we see that you all have taken this effort, it is important. However, there are two issues here. One is time, which is very important. We can sit down and talk until the cows come home. If we don't implement, we are in trouble. The other issue is finances. I think we have to be very conscious of the fact that it could be very difficult here. When I looked at the projects that are around SADC and all the pricings here, I think the number of noughts behind the figures are tremendous. And I don't see what we put aside for South Africa of the amounts that we would need or there also. The other thing which is very important, we in the SADC, we're all at different levels of infrastructure and development. And we take these things, we're not so serious, but some countries are not as serious as we are. And I think this is a handicap. And I don't know how we can influence those that are pulling back to work together so we can see where we go and at the end of the day what we can achieve. Because that to me is very important. The other issue is the solar. I think it's so important because we have the sun here. However, we have never discussed solar to the real great extent. Because I still need to be convinced that the solar system will be economically viable for electricity generation. On the water, I give it 110%. But when it comes to developing electricity, I still have a problem. I need to be convinced. I seriously need to be convinced that it can operate. We visited one solar plant. It was magnificent. All the batteries and the computers and everything was there. But they could not answer one question. What did it cost? They could not tell us how much it cost. And eventually we went out that evening and they demonstrated how it can operate. And midway I heard a diesel engine kicking in. And so I said to the guy, I said, hey, what's happening? So he says, hey, no, don't worry. And we saw through. But the diesel engine had to kick in. So that worries me. And I think we need to investigate and look at this thing more seriously. And then, of course, we are unfortunate in this country that not to have crude. And I think if we could be in that area of crude, we'd be safe. Because I think the international community and regarding crude and the Middle East, they're playing their own games. And unfortunately, we're suffering in the process because we have friends in the whole world where we could be getting the product. But these agreements tie us down to these issues. But once again, thanks very much for the input.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, thank you for the presentation. I mean, it's definitely very wide in scope and brings up a number of questions. I'll just go through a few of them. I mean, when we look at oil exploration, PetroSA hasn't had the best record in terms of that. I mean, in fact, if anything, we've wasted about 2 billion rand on exploring Equatorial Guinea and in Egypt, and we haven't come up with anything. But, I mean, as you say, it is a very risky, it's a high-risk, high-return business. And speaking to an oil company here, in fact, an oil exploration company in South Africa, they say that what often happens is that the greatest profits actually get made in the exploration side. And that the concern is that actually Africans do not benefit from that particular side. It's usually investors on the stock exchange in Canada and outside of the continent that make the money when they find the oil. They then can sell the rights and basically make huge profits off that. So perhaps we should be looking at some kind of a financial system which can actually draw in African investors to make sure that we actually do get those kinds of returns in terms of the fines that we're making in Africa. It's something perhaps to look at around that particular issue. Now, I'd just be interested, I mean, on the regional dimension, I mean, I think, you know, it's a game changer to a large extent. It's a game changer for South Africa as well in terms of our own IRP. Because if we can access some of the energy sources that are in the rest of this region, we might actually be able to not go ahead with some of the investments that we're planning in terms of South Africa as well. But the trick is, and I think, you know, Honorable Lucas brought this up, I mean, the real trick to all of this is the economics behind energy. And where we need to make sure that we've got security of supply, but also very cost-effective energy generation. And so what is missing from this presentation, and something which we do need to engage with, is that I need to know what the economics behind each of these developments are. What is, for instance, gas-powered electricity cost per kilowatt hour? What are we looking at? If we do the Mozambique-Tanzania corridor, for instance, the problem with it, though, is that you lose so much in terms of transmission coming all the way down. So is it better to put an LNG port into Tanzania and to bring the gas down to South Africa and for us to generate it? You know, all of these things need to be grappled with, and I think we can't truly do that until we see the economics behind all of this. But also just to say, I mean, there has been a huge find of Tanzania of gas, but from what I've heard is that the Japanese are already in there and already desperate to get their hands on that gas and are wanting to export it out. So, you know, I think that as South Africa, we need to be a bit more bold about actually moving in and making sure that we also actually develop a regional plan. MOUs are fine, but at the end of the day, it comes down to hard finance and hard commitments, and that I'm not seeing enough of. And then just lastly on the Grand Inga, I mean, you know, this has been discussed. I remember discussing it with the ambassador in Congo when I went through there in 1997. You know, so this has been on the cards for a long, long time. And it is a game changer. 40,000 megawatts will change the whole regional energy picture in Southern Africa. But what is it that's holding it back now? I know that politics was initially the problem, instability in the region, but what is it that we can tangibly do to actually start to make this project a reality? We need to know this, and what are the blockages that are preventing it from moving forward? I'll be interested to hear. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the slide on demand and supply situation, ma'am. I think the presentation was excellently done. This slide brings a bit of concern to me in terms of the generation capacity, especially in Africa. And it's quite clear that if you analyze the African situation, that Africa's energy rich but electricity poor. And it will, of course, there must be huge investments so that we can rectify this position. South Africa is the only country here that I can see on this slide that has generation of note. The rest is, indeed, you can see that it's very uncapacitated in terms of electricity supply. And that brings the question of load shedding also to South Africa that we've seen lately. And it's a pity that we didn't have the presentation on Eskom, Chair, as was scheduled for the last meeting. And because load shedding, you know, just my concern on that, why...
Coming.
Is it coming?
Within this month.
Fine, and I think in terms of load shedding, that's also time is of the essence, as many of my colleagues have said. But Chair, yes, you know, we've spoken about the lack of investments, and I think we have to simply start to get going in terms of making it conducive for investors to invest. And I think we've also, in South Africa, we need the ESMO bill to come forward so that we can at least have the private generation capacity. And I think this is, in the broader sense, also needed in the whole of the region. You've spoken about the regulatory authorities that needs to step up and coordinate, and perhaps that's where we should start with the regulators and see that they make the conditions conducive. Also, my concern in terms of security of supply on gas and oil. You know, if I can just make an analogy to Germany, they import the gas from Russia, as far as I know, and they import nuclear from France. And they're creating a total dependency on other countries. And what I find in South Africa in terms of our gas and oil supplies is that we're exactly in the same boat. And it will take a huge effort to change that. And, you know, we've just seen MOUs, and perhaps, you know, if time permits, one day we will have to go into more details as to the terms and conditions of those contracts. Because in terms of these supplies, it is... It's a concern, and it's perturbing to know that we are dependent on outside supply, on foreign supply, and you know, if we speak about building those huge infrastructure and the cost of that infrastructure, and it's based on external volumes of supply, it becomes extremely problematic. Just in terms of the funding. The bilateral relations of note, of course, is China, $20 billion. It looks like it's in the bag. I'm not sure. Is it a memo of understanding, and what would the terms and conditions be? And, of course, if you speak of this type of funding and finance at this level, we should be able to of course know what's the intent, which source of power are they talking about? Are they talking about nuclear in this instance? Is it designated for nuclear, or is it for renewable energies, or is it a mix? And can you give us an indication of that? Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. My apology for arriving a little bit late, Chair. Just caught up in the traffic. But, Chair, I just want to get you, you know, most of the question has been asked by my honorable members. But obviously, I just want to get some few private clarity and to say how far is Sanedi in terms of your acknowledgement, in terms of your knowledge. How far is Sanedi in terms of the researching in terms of the smart grid initiative? If maybe one can be able to also to get to the aware of that, because I think it has been having a talk for a period of some time now, and we've been getting aware of it. You know, want to probably get aware around that. But I also heard you saying, you know, South Africa has also certain appliances that can also, you know, comply in terms of the efficiency electricity. Which one are those appliances? Because I think if they are already there, we must start now, you know, by marketing them in South Africa and ensuring that, you know, our community also start to buy them and use them, rather than continuing buying the old, you know, appliances that are not efficient. The other issue relates to, you know, we went to an oversight last year, where we saw these electric vehicles initiative, but the engagement that we had there, because we visited the electricity vehicles and we visited also the sector where it deals around the gas vehicles. The assessment that we had, and of which my personal view was to say the gas vehicles were much more efficient than the electricity ones. So my view is that because the explanation that we got from the professor that was there was that the electricity vehicles cannot be able to sustain itself for a long period of time. So that you can have some you know, sort of certain kilometers, and after that, you know, it will have a challenge, because the gas one was also have to, you know, have an altar to each other with the fuel consumption, so it could be able also to say we can run as, you know, an efficient gas vehicle and also a clean energy, but also probably when the gas has finished along the process, it can still continue, it cannot stop, it cannot cut the energy of the vehicles, so it cannot cause any confusion within the drivers. So my challenge is that what are the two a conflicting, you know, statement in terms of these two initiatives that are run by the Department of Energy, both of them. What happened? Because we can't allow our department to continue to invest the important of money in some initiatives that won't be able to help South Africa in the long run. You know, the other aspect was that I'm trying also to check in terms of the conversion cost. Who's going to, you know, be held responsible for the conversion? Because these pilot projects can be, you know, be run as many as they are. But at the end of the day, if one wants to convert the vehicle, who's going to, you know, be liable for the cost? Because that's one of the other things that is going to be highly be problematic. The other aspect relates to the 20 billion, you know. I like that, you know, we're signing MOUs and we're having this big envisage a project. But when we say these projects are aligned to job creation and job initiatives, my problem, I always want to work around figures, because figures also help us to monitor whether we're signing ourselves into debt sentence or what. Because once you direct us to the impact to document, you're going to cost us a very huge, because the impact document is vast. It's not also concentrating on one aspect of job creation. You must be able to say this MOU that has been signed is going to create so much job opportunities. State the figure so that at least we can be able to know. So that we can be able also to hold the department accountable in the near future. To say you promise us that this is going to be a real result, the results. And at the present moment, we haven't seen any of those things. Probably the other clarity that I need to get a clarity, what is this soft loan? Maybe it's my ignorance, my apology, but I would like to know what is the soft loan and what does it entail? What are the terms and conditions of this soft loan? Because you can say soft loan and we might assume other members, they might assume that they know, but we don't know directly what is the soft loan, what does it entail, what are the, you know, the laws within it, what is expected. Chair, I think I'll just stop there.
Thanks, Honorable Khadeba, but I trust you'll appreciate some of your questions. I'm not necessarily within the international context that is for today. So, Mazungu, I know you are capable enough to respond, but I'm sure we will understand if you would need some more time, you know, maybe to consult Sanid or whatever on others. But please try your best, particularly on the last questions. But the floor is yours now. Thanks very much. Oh, sorry, Dereslav.
My apology also, Chairperson, for coming late. I was not helped by traffic this time. I drank stress-related medication last night and I overslept, just to be honest and truthful. Chair, slide number 21.
Well taken, Dereslav.
Slide number 25, Chairperson, says the power trading is possible in SADC. That is a very attractive statement. And it goes further to say, but there is a need to create an enabling environment. And it goes, and then bullet number two says, with SADC, governments, utilities, and developers have identified that problems exist in the enabling environment, e.g. financing, security of supply, regulating, and so on and so forth. My question is just, after having identified this as the problem, what plans are there, or what suggestions are there to look at possibilities of removing these obstacles, without which the rest of the slides, the implementation of the rest of these beautiful plans in the remaining slides are just theory.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, I do agree with the Chairperson. Unfortunately, we couldn't bring everyone who is technically involved or directly involved in some of the questions. I have, as you might notice, I've been frantically putting everything down. What we are going to do on the question that you won't be able to respond to today, it's either we will send in a written response, or I will make sure that when we next present, especially when we do our strike plan, for instance, our plans for the year, to make sure that included in those presentations, those questions are also answered, in terms of that at least we'll have the people directly involved on the day, and if you want to ask additional or follow-up questions, at least they'll be there. But I'm hoping that I've managed to take almost all of them down between the three of us, will be able to get everything down. I just make a couple of comments. On the issue of Iran, I did have a quick chat with the DG this morning regarding that, because we are anticipating a question out of Iran at the moment, which is understandable with the latest developments, that as we speak, I think on Tuesday, no, what day is it today? Just Tuesday, it was last week, there was a cabinet committee meeting on that. We have submitted a cabinet memo, which is under discussion for tomorrow's session as well. And even now, the DG is attending the meeting with the minister on their matter. So we should be getting more details, to be honest, out of that from the two discussions from tomorrow's meeting as well. So we won't say much on that. On the issue of the World Bank study on what is happening in Africa, focusing on SADC in this particular case, yes, we have to acknowledge the fact that we are dealing with different different countries with different infrastructure developments, with different political demands, with different financial challenges. It's a very involved effort that the minister and the department are getting involved in, and I think for us as South Africa, we're at the bottom of the continent. We don't have any particular resources that we have as a country, so we are to a certain extent at the mercy of our neighbors. It is important for us that as a country to build those relationships. That's why it's costing us so much money and so much time to maintain those relationships, so that we are able to say we sign an MOU, it actually succeeds in the sense that it accumulates to a situation where it's an implementable project that can last longer. I know there were challenges even with Kahora Basa. I know when I joined the DME in 1999, Kahora Basa was on the table at the time. We had huge fights at the time with the Auditor General in terms of why is the department, what is the department not doing anything. To an extent, if we remember, I'm not sure how young Honorable Freiling is, at the time, we actually were at the verge of signing, we were actually thinking of signing off the debt, because the debt had accumulated so much, it had almost 10 times fold at that time. It was 1999. We had some financial challenges with the Auditor General. What do we do? We decided to write it down to 1 rand, keep it in our books, because we needed to keep it in our books. We're not going to write it off completely. But you cannot keep it in our books because that's just tipping off our balance sheet terribly. So it's those kinds of things that we need to be patient, unfortunately, when you deal with other countries. The political status in most of the countries does play a critical role. But remember also with that particular project, it was the political status. The INGA project is going through more or less the same kind of challenges. But I think the approach that the minister has adopted with the establishment of the Department of Energy is that we have to participate. We have to take the chance with the hope that the results will be arriving sooner than what has happened in the past. Yes, the issue of Honorable Lucas, he's already left. We will take that one point in terms of looking at we wanted to find out the cost of all of these projects. We will be looking into that one at a later stage. I think on the side of the Ismobile, I'm not going to say much on the Ismobile chairperson. I think that is Chairperson's favorite topic at the moment. I think by now members have got responses from them. Other than that, I will see how many of these that Ms. Mara will be able to answer directly, and as I promised, let's look at actually resubmitting our responses or getting the members to, as and when they come and present our strat plan, will definitely be included in the presentations for the day.
Thank you. On the issue related to Mama Bula, is the Department of Energy, there is very little we can say about the project because it's the prerogative of the government of Botswana, and we take the cue from the development in Botswana. With respect to general investment in the energy-related projects, it is important to note that the energy projects are long-term projects, and negotiations, particularly related to the economics of the projects, they tend to take longer than usual because of the nature of the projects themselves. So it is very difficult to have closure on most of the projects because of the intricacies involved. The other serious challenge on the continent in general is that we don't have the skills and the capabilities to put bankable projects on the table. It is an issue that has been identified by the African Energy Ministers Conference in September, and they have highlighted that it is an issue that they need to table with the stakeholders and indicate that we, as a continent, we need to develop capacity in putting on the table bankable projects. The other issue that was also identified is that to have a bankable project is an investment in itself. Taking for an example the backbone project in Mozambique, it did cost them about $12 million to actually put the project together. And for some of the countries, just having that kind of money itself is a challenge. So those are some of the intricacies that are involved when we look at the projects and when we want to table the project and when we want to present them. So as energy ministers, they have identified some of those challenges, and they are also we are in the process of putting together those challenges so that we can list them as areas where the continent needs assistance. Then on the issue of Mutombo project, I'm sure that the Petro SA as an entity is cognizant of their responsibilities, and they are aware of the mandate of the project and its significance and strategic importance to the country. In their discussions with equity partners and any other form of partners, I'm sure they have to adhere to those principles, and that the approval process will still have the department as a gatekeeper and will ensure that the necessary compliances are in place before execution. Then in terms of the different levels of development for different countries, I think that is an important issue, and that is why also some of the projects are being looked at within the regional aspect. As I've indicated before, I've said that in order to commercialize some of the projects, you need anchor customers. And working together in the Southern African power pool, in most cases, South Africa presents itself as an anchor customer, which acts as an attraction to potential investors to engage in specific projects. And the relationship itself lends itself to attraction of investors. But what we should also be cognizant of is that the energy sector is in itself in competition with other sectors in respective countries. So it depends on each respective country's where the priorities are. If your road infrastructure or your health or your education is a priority, then energy suffers. I think it is important through the parliamentary processes that as parliaments of the different countries meet, they also engage on these issues and they give collectively mandates to their own countries to ensure that they prioritize projects that are of strategic importance to the region. So I think that it could also be an issue that could be raised through our own parliamentary processes. Then the issue of solar electricity is viable and what it does cost to the economies. What we are learning from the Renewable Energy Annual Report, in fact, is that the solar technology, cost of solar technology, has actually gone down by almost 50%. And that the capacity to produce the technology actually is significantly increased. So what it demonstrates to us is that the demand for solar increases, the price for solar will decrease. And as the technology itself is consolidated, the cost of the technology will actually decrease. So in the long run, we are looking at the cost of solar actually decreasing. The cost of wind is also going to be decreasing. That is what we are actually getting from the reports that are being presented on the international energy market. In terms of the reliability of technology, if you look at the history of any technologies, you actually realize that the technology perfects itself with time. I'm reasonably confident that with time, the solar technology will be more efficient, more reliable, and will be able to also overcome the hurdles of the storage issues related to solar. I'm also pleased so I think that is about solar technology. Then maybe I can also talk to the issue of the electric vehicle and the use of hybrid vehicles that use both LPG or gas, compressed natural gas, and petrol. The hybrid technology can also be applied to both. With respect to the electric vehicle technology, what is very important for us is to watch the development in the battery sector. I think our CEO of Anglo American has actually indicated that they are going to focus on the battery technology. I'm pretty confident that with the investment in the battery technology, we are actually going to gain a lot from the electric vehicle initiative. And secondly, electricity, once you generate it, we don't have mechanisms of saving it. Having an electric vehicle actually allows us to charge the vehicles during the night and use the electricity. So it is a technology that is new, it's on a development trajectory, and we are looking forward to the success of this technology and the reconfiguration of cities to allow it to be utilized at a larger scale. I'm aware that, for example, the maximum distance that the electrical vehicles can go is between 80 to 120 kilometers, I think, which is a limitation now because of the technology and the battery ability to store the electricity. But as I have indicated, there are significant investment into the battery technology to improve the storage capacity of that. And there is also, I think, during COP17, there was a I can't remember the name of the vehicle that was also on display. Yes, Renault Toro, yeah. Yes, that was also on display, which actually demonstrated that there is significant improvement in the technology. Then with respect to the Petro SA high costs related to exploration, I think in the presentation we have indicated that they are it's high risk, high return, in that we have gone through the exploration phase, we have identified the limitations, the risks associated with it, and that PetroSA is now focusing on producing and new producing assets. Then in terms of the benefits of the upstream sector, I agree with the Honorable Member. If you look at most of these oil companies, if you look at their corporate strategy, they are actually moving out of the downstream to concentrate on the upstream because A, they have the technology, B, they have the competencies, C, they have the skills, and C, they have the funds to do that. And they are precisely moving in that direction. But an interesting development as well in the sector is that we are also seeing the emergence of national oil companies in these oil-producing countries. And these national oil companies are controlling a significant amount of resources. In fact, more than what is being controlled by the multinational oil companies. If you look at Saudi Arabia, you look at Saudi Aramco, it's a leader. You look at Angola, Sonango is becoming a significant leader. You look at Venezuela, PDVSA is a significant leader. So you can actually see that there is a realization that the profits are in the upstream and countries have reviewed their strategies and they've moved to the strategy of using the national oil company so that they maximize the benefits and profits from the upstream as well. On the issue of the economics of the project, I think we have already discussed that, but the specifics related to each project in its respective country, we can only go by what the country gives us. Unless we have been involved in the feasibility studies, we cannot say with certainty the actual cost and commercial viability of those respective projects. So we will not be in a position to indicate the cost effectiveness of projects that are in specific countries. We can only talk to our own projects, and ESCOM and Petro SA will be able to talk to those issues. With relate the Grand Inga, I think MEM has already responded to the Grand Inga project issue. And then the other important element which was brought up by one of the honorable member of the IPPs, bringing IPPs into investment in the energy sector to alleviate the sector. I think it is possible to go the IPP route. We have also done it. We have seen that there is an appetite for IPPs to invest, but you also need to ensure that the enabling environment is in place to make sure that we attract those IPPs. What we have done through the Integrated Energy Resource Plan, we have given an indication and certainty to potential investors of our intentions and hence their participation. We also have a regulatory framework that is implemented by the National Energy Regulator. It is clear, it is precise, it gives confidence to the investors, and hence they are coming. I hope that this will be a demonstration effect to our neighboring countries, that they also follow suit, and there is an indication that most of the SADC members in particular, they are establishing their regulators, and those that have regulators, they are already working with the other regulators to make sure that they create a conducive environment. On the table of the energy ministers are issues related to, for example, attraction of investment, cost-reflective tariffs, and so on and so forth. But honorable members can understand the complexities of, for instance, introducing cost-reflective electricity, given the different and different the generality of our communities, where we have poor, then we also have rich, and those who can access. It's very difficult to really focus and ensure that each member country introduce the notion of cost-reflective tariffs, although there's a general agreement in principle that we need to have cost-reflective tariffs that would attract investment. So efforts are being done to ensure that the enabling environment is in place in order to attract funding. But I think what is also important is that through the parliamentary processes themselves within the region, discussions on such issues and the need to highlight the importance of harmonization of policy, the need to attract investors, also needs to come from the parliamentary processes themselves, and also from the ministers themselves, and also from the communities, so that collectively together we can contribute to the creation of the enabling environment. Then with respect to the funding, what is defined as a soft loan? Soft loans, we are looking at countries that would be willing to provide assistance in terms of funding to our, particularly the energy program, particularly the renewable energy initiative, but providing loans that are not going to attract interest that are as high as those prevailing on the private money market and or financial institutions that we are used to. So that's why we are saying they are soft loans. We would also want to make sure that those loans would allow our own companies, particularly the small companies, to access such funding. So it is partly one of those elements, those that will be coined within that particular fund, that it should promote localization, technology transfer, access to small emerging energy investors that are local, and so on and so forth. And that particular element is currently being coined by the National Treasury together with about 9 other departments that have been put together by Cabinet. It includes the DST, it includes EDD, it includes DTI, it includes the Department of Energy, it includes the Department of Environment, and our own financial institutions such as the IDC, the DBSA, and other research institutions, so that when we get that fund, we will be able to coin a mechanism which would really work to our benefit, but also promote the deployment of renewable energy. Then with respect to the 20 billion, We are very much aware of funds that have been issued with strict conditions. And the issue of conditions is an issue that is currently being looked at. One, to identify the project. Two, to also map out the conditions of the loan. The other reason for having funds like this is that it also gives us as a country a leeway to bargain. If you only have one source of funding and you don't have another source, you are now subject to the person with, or the company or institution or the country that is giving you funding. But if you have got a menu of funders that are willing to look at you, you also then have a leverage to bargain with the different institutions and say, I have been given X and I can only take W from you. So it gives us that muscle and the flexibility and the leverage to be in a position to bargain. Yes. Then with respect to the Smart Grid Initiative, SANEDI has got a unit which is looking at the Smart Grid Initiative. They've not yet gone into promulgation, but they are on the learning curve, and I'm sure that in the funding of SANEDI there will be sufficient funds to allow them to take that particular initiative and invest in it more seriously. Then in terms of energy efficient appliances, yes, the appliances are already available on the market. If you look, and when you want to buy your electric iron, your electric kettle, your refrigerator, they all have different ratings that shows you the electricity consumption. So what is very important is that we need to roll out, and this is what has just been approved, an energy efficiency campaign to make the consumers and the households aware of the different types of appliances and the efficient ones, and to make a distinction so that the consumers can now focus on buying energy efficiency appliances, and to also educate them on how they can save. In fact, if you do your own energy efficiency, my daughter actually is renting a flat, so they've got this meter. A prepaid meter. They don't want to switch on a heater when it's cold because they can actually see that the money on the meter is just going down like water. So things like that will assist the consumers to say, I can save my energy by doing this X and then using W appliance and so on and so forth. But we need an aggressive marketing, so an aggressive energy efficiency awareness campaign, which is actually has just been approved and should be rolled out very soon by the department to make the consumers aware of different types of energy efficiency appliances. Thank you, Chief.
Honourable members, it's been much at it. Can you take a break? Tea can be almost cold by now. A 10-minute break, please.